You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA. You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 408 of the Fabulous Peltoncast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
You know what edition it is.
The Rich Amaral?
It's the Rich Amaral edition. Every 08 is the Rich Amaral edition.
Shouts as always to Rich Amaral. It's our first time in person since, I'm pretty sure, January.
Is that for real?
I mean,
Just seeing each other in person?
Yes, it's the first time we've seen each other. I believe the first time we did it over Zoom for sure was like around the trade deadline, because I didn't want to drive over here at that period of time, and then I just haven't been back since.
Well, you're welcome.
there's a new light fixture, it appears.
Oh, yeah, well, there's the light fixture.
Yeah.
See, good podcasting. For us.
We'll have to post a picture of the light fixture on Instagram on Peltoncast. All right, well, let's get into it. First off, this week, the Peltoncast tournament challenges are back.
Hello.
For both the men's and women's tournaments. We'll have those links in the post note. I'll get them on Instagram as well. The ESPN Peltoncast groups, where you can compete against the fabulous Pelton brothers, possible many third Pelton brothers, others. I don't know if we're offering any prizes this year.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. But.
I don't know. Maybe.
The real prize.
If you don't have a Talkin' Taco Time shirt, there's always a Talkin' Taco Time shirt.
But only limited sizes. It may not be you.
Maybe size small? Is this you?
It may not fit you, but there is a Talkin' Taco Time shirt that may fit someone you know.
There'll be some further merch of some kind also.
At some point.
I was thinking about it. I was at a location earlier today. We'll get to this when we get to Seattle, the search for Seattle's best cookie. But I was at a location earlier today, and I was like, we got to have this location at the pod. Because I feel like this location is a place that many of the listener have not been to, and they got to have it. They have got to try it.
I agree with this assessment.
That has nothing to do. I mean, we could give away cookies. We could get cookies for as long as somebody's local.
That's a good idea. I mean, they ship nationally, many of these places as well.
Great. So there we go. All right. We've got it. We've got a prize then.
Like a 6-pack of cookies?
Sure. As long as you're willing to pay for it.
All right. Fair enough.
Done. Wow. Workshopped right here. Does Treat serve ship nationally?
I don't know if they ship nationally.
Well, but I think they come in 4 packs anyway.
But at the very least, we know that Bell's does.
Oh, yeah, I think Bell's. But yeah, Bell's cookies might make sense. Let's do Bell's cookies. Have you seen the April Fool's cookies?
I have seen the April Fool's cookies from our friends at Treat and Virion.
Because I was wondering, what day? The NCAA tournament's like quite a bit after April Fool's, though, this year, right? The tournament final.
The final is, I believe, a week after April Fool's Day, which I believe falls on Monday this year.
So not only will it be a corndog cookie, it'll be a week old.
Spicy hot Cheeto. Crispy corn dog, fish sauce caramel, chocolate chip, and spaghetti and meatballs. I got to say, the fish sauce caramel chocolate chip actually sounds like it might be good.
That's what they were hyping up. I mean, the spicy Cheeto is obviously good.
Yes.
The spaghetti and meatballs makes me a little bit nervous. I always wonder about fish sauce, you know?
Yeah.
But she said literally earlier today, she was like, it's just a hint of it, you know? Like, these are good cookies, but you just get a hint of the flavor.
They're not making these to actually prank people.
I've never had any of the like Crazy Jones soda flavors, but seemed interesting to me.
Seemed interesting to you. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, getting to our toast this week.
Oh, the NCAA tournament pool. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're there.
Compete against us. Should be fun. All right. Congratulations to the Storm's Mercedes Russell.
Should be fun.
Who received the Rachel Sporn Medal is MVP of the WNBL's Grand Final. Russell delivered the winning shot in Game 2 as the Southside Flyers rallied from a 1-0 deficit to win the best-of-three series 2-1. The Flyers won the deciding Game 3 115-81 at home behind 13 points and 13 boards from Russell. The win was Lauren Jackson's 6th WNBL championship and first since 2010. As her remarkable comeback continues apace. All right, next up, congrats to Luis Castillo, chosen as the M's opening night starter for March 28th against the Red Sox. Coming up.
Called it.
I mean, it's not really that surprising. He started opening night last year. George Kirby had a case for it, certainly. Luis Castillo said he was shocked, at least surprised.
He was shocked. I'm shocked that this is the case.
Could not have seen this coming.
It was like when Taylor Swift won Album of the Year, and she's like, gasping, me? Of all people? Taylor Swift?
And congrats to Lorenzo Romar, who has found a new job. He's joined the staff of WCC rival Loyola Marymount as an assistant under Stan Johnson. So good for Loro.
Where?
Loyola Marymount.
He's an assistant at Loyola Marymount?
He went from Pepperdine, which is in Malibu on the beach, to Loyola Marymount, which is like overlooking the beach.
All right. All right.
Well, I think Lorenzo Romar might actually have this figured out.
Yeah.
For the UW campus is very nice. I have much respect to Montlake and the view of Mount Rainier and everything, but if you can go back and forth between Pepperdine and Loyola Marymount, that might be the way to go. All right, lastly this week.
Oh, not lastly. I have one to add.
Oh, you're adding one?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll add that now because I want to close with this lastly.
I also should add, for the final time this year, a toast to the Seattle Thunderbirds for their 5-4 victory over the Portland Terhawks at Climate Pledge Arena. They finish up the season with a home and home against Portland. And why are they Terhawks? Because there's no win in Winterhawks, baby. That's right. Go Birds. Huge W for the Thunderbirds on Sunday night in overtime, coming back from a 4-2 deficit.
Wow. Okay. I was unaware of all this information. Did you attend this game?
No, I just watched it on TV.
Okay.
I've got a bit that I was drinking. I was drinking an insane energy drink, and I like opened up the McDonald's app, and they had a Thunderbirds promotion, and I was just like, go Birds! And then we workshopped the whole bit about the Portland Terhawks. Because there's no win in Winterhawks.
You and who workshopped this?
Me and Luca.
Okay.
He demanded every week that I do this bit on the podcast.
Every week. Wow.
Really, the funniest part is how passionate Luca is about this bit.
We're going to add the T-Birds to the rundown. They've replaced UW baseball.
Really, the only thing that he really cares about is calling them the Terhawks.
It is a good bet. I didn't get it at first. I admit it. All right, lastly this week, farewell to Aaron Donald, who announced his retirement after 10 Pro Bowl appearances in his many seasons, 8 All-Pro appearances, 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards, and 111 career sacks, 15 and a half of which came against the Seahawks. It was not actually his most against any team because he had 16 against the NFC rival Arizona Cardinals.
Why was I kind of sad when this happened? Right?
I mean, it's not like the Seahawks are in position enough to really take advantage of this.
Don't ask Pete Carroll and John Schneider. Oh, well. No. To them, they're Leonard Williams away. Maybe some sort of cloning process.
Carroll thinks that he's not thinking about how far away UW is. That's his main focus. Yeah, I mean, Aaron Donald was the measuring stick for so many years in the NFC West.
I mean, he's the best defensive player that we ever saw in our entire lives play against the Seahawks. It's just unbelievably disruptive, and having to see him twice a year for so long. I mean, he who injured Geno Smith this last year.
Believe so.
And Russell Wilson.
Yes.
But even you just watch the highlights and you're like, these weren't even dirty plays.
No.
He's just at a totally different level and still at that exact
same level.
He was
just too good.
Yeah. Aaron Donald was too good. Like the fact that they're, I hate to admit it, but that there are a couple of players that the fact that the Seahawks didn't find a way to draft them, him and George Kittle, is still just deeply haunting.
George Kittle, obviously, they had a much more realistic chance of drafting.
Oh, yeah, than many rounds. But they could have easily found themselves in a position. I mean, any team that didn't draft Aaron Donald probably should be regretting not drafting Aaron Donald.
I mean,
but that would have required trading up to have gotten Aaron Donald.
Was that the year that they didn't even have a first-round pick? One of the years, I should say?
No, I think they had a pick just slightly after him. It was like pick 17 or something.
I just said how many years he played in the NFL, but I cannot off the top of my head do the math on which draft that is. 2014, right, that he was in?
Was it James Carpenter?
Yes, he was in the 2014 draft. He went pick 13. The Seahawks did not.
Oh, that was the pick that they had. Oh, that was the Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, they had just won the Super Bowl, so they were pick 32. Where I correctly Kevin Domist that they were going to, a quarterback would be drafted with the Seahawks pick, or Teddy Bridgewater specifically would be. Yeah. So it would have been pretty hard for them to get all the way up to 13.
It's just, just when Aaron Donald fell to that pick. But again, I have a theory that a person isn't a person until they're a person, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
Aaron Donald isn't Aaron Donald until Aaron Donald is Aaron Donald.
Of course.
And people overrate the fact of how much Aaron Donald is Aaron Donald before Aaron Donald is Aaron Donald.
I mean, there definitely was an element of we were thinking like, oh man, this guy is only getting dropping to where he is because he's kind of short. Mm-hmm. It was the Russell Wilson thing, which probably Rams fans lament Russell Wilson going to the Seahawks.
Yes.
A little more again, than Seahawks.
Russell Wilson wasn't Russell Wilson before Russell Wilson Aaron was Russell Donald Wilson. Going to the and Rams. Now Russell Wilson is not Russell Wilson somehow. No. But...
TBD if Justin Fields is Russell Wilson.
Anyway, it was Aaron Donald was so good. It was annoying. And seeing this, I just felt so completely empty. It was like, even if the Seahawks end up being good again, the fact that they didn't beat Aaron Donald. Like, I don't feel that way about Nick Bosa. You know what I mean?
No.
Including all the extracurriculars. I'm like, if Nick Bosa retired, I'd be like, thank God. Right? Or if he went to another team, be so fine with that. But Aaron Donald was like, sometimes there are players you want your team to beat, you know?
I mean, people were wondering whether you were going to be retiring Aaron Donald in your signature fashion.
About the retire bitch?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay. Like if there's later time. In the pod, you might, the mood might strike you.
I don't know. I do not feel that way about Aaron Donald, if that makes sense.
I mean, it's interesting because like one of the things we talked about on last week's pod is you feeling like the Seahawks had a better chance of finishing second in the division because the Rams are getting that second place schedule. The Seahawks will have the more favorable third place schedule.
Oh, I think they're still a young team, but I would bet on Rams regression.
Now it seems that much more likely given the way that Aaron Donald was propping up what was otherwise a very young and you know, not very pedigreed defense. But to me, the empty part of it is like, okay, great. Maybe
life
the
itself.
Seahawks. Yeah. maybe the Seahawks are. Look, well, have you looked at that forecast after today?
The constant emptiness that nags at our lives.
This is the falsest of all
the feeling,
false springs.
The feeling in the back of your mind permanently that maybe this is all there is.
Felton Cast has gotten a good run early in this one. But like, even if the Seahawks are the second best team in the NFC West, it's not like they're anywhere close to the top teams in the NFC West. Or in the NFC.
I was going to say, how many teams are you counting here? There's only four.
Oh, the Cardinals.
They're probably close to the top teams in the NFC West.
San Francisco.
In the NFC?
San Francisco, I don't think they're close to.
We'll see.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I mean,
sure.
You're that confident about... I would bet on regression from anybody. I would always anticipate that every team is probably going to regress in some way, especially after they come off. Like
I agree that people overstate the degree of certainty about teams going into this season.
Think about the Eagles up into like week 10 of this year. Now the Eagles are in like chaos or whatever.
Well, I still would consider one of the teams that the Seahawks are nowhere close to.
And then it's probably true, but
and the point isn't necessarily that it's any of those teams individually. It's that of that group of Detroit, Green Bay, Philadelphia, Dallas, San Francisco. I don't know if anyone from the NFC South qualifies for this. Like, of those teams, three of them are going to be really good next year. Maybe all five of them won't be good next year, but three of them will.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think the Aaron Donald retirement changes that equation that much. No. I still think they were probably going to be better than the Rams. They're going to be better than the Rams with Aaron Donald or without Aaron Donald.
All right, should we talk about the Seahawks offseason?
Sure. Because
they like basically had re-signed a couple of guys, obviously Leonard Williams in particular, but they then did basically the entire offseason in the span of a few days, adding, let's see here, 1, 2, 3. And Pharaoh Brown had been signed, eight additional outside free agents and re-signing a couple and making a trade. Where do you think we should start here?
Let's start with the acquisitions in the offseason. What do you mean, where should we start?
All right, let's start at safety.
Okay, well, we're starting at the back.
Yeah.
Back to front.
Well, that was the place. Linebacker and safety were the two places that the Seahawks had the biggest needs, unquestionably, and made additions of players who are undoubtedly going to start this year. Some of the other guys might start, might play a fair bit, but not as much as these guys.
How about if we go through all of the players and then talk about it overall?
I mean, but I think we should go by position groups.
Sure.
So at safety, they added Rashawn Jenkins on a two-year deal for up to $12 million, which coincidentally is basically the exact structure of the Julian Love contract last offseason. Jenkins was waived by the Jaguars, entering the final season of a four-year $35 million contract, despite starting all 48 games he played for Jacksonville, including every game the team played the past two seasons. Originally a fourth-round pick by the Chargers, so Jenkins presumably comes in as the starter opposite Love at safety, as the team gets a lot cheaper at that position after the release of Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams.
Always loved Rashawn Jenkins.
Really? You had a position on Rashawn Jenkins?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I love that as someone who is waived, he does not count against the compensatory pick formula.
That, I mean,
and we'll get to that element of it
exactly.
later.
Exactly. Yeah. This is a great signing. Again, I don't want to talk about everybody individually, though, because I want to talk about this overall. I have an overall take. I don't know if I have individual player takes.
Okay. At safety, they also on Monday signed Kayvon Wallace to a deal that we don't yet have terms for. Wallace was waived twice last season, first by the Eagles, who drafted him in the fourth round in 2020, and then by Arizona, but still started 12 games between the Cardinals and Tennessee Titans. Remarkably, even though those teams played the Seahawks a combined three times, he missed both of their games against the Seahawks. Played primarily as a box safety, Wallace won two national championships at Clemson.
You have in the notes at Arizona.
Yes,
I was like, damn, I missed both of Arizona's national championships.
Jen Fish is really good. Or at linebacker, another player they signed who was waived, Jerome Baker, who was waived by the Dolphins entering the final season of what was set to be a three-year $37.5 million extension, as the Dolphins ended up essentially trading Jerome Baker for Jordan Brooks, the Dolphins and Seahawks swapping linebackers. Miami originally drafted him in the third round. He started 33 games in 2021 and 2022 combined, but was limited to 13 games, 12 starts by injuries last season. Still just age 27. And has really done a good job at his best of generating pressure, is a blitzer, 7 sacks in 2020, 9.5 combined in 2021 and 2022, but just 1.5 last season. He was graded a 67 by PFF last season, which was worse than Bobby Wagner, a very strong 82, but better than Brooks at 57. So,
okay,
this is the exact type of contract, I would say, that I wanted the Seahawks side. Player coming off being waived who still has like starter ability to a one-year contract that either you re-sign him or you potentially get comp pick value if someone else signs him.
Okay, but they're not getting, because a lot of these deals are one-year deals, and they've taken this approach before, and I think you of all people, ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton, were critical of that perspective prior.
I think it's when you're trying to get a bargain, like lock that in for multiple years. And I think that reflects on the other linebacker okay. they signed, Tyrell Dodson, who got a one-year deal with a $4.2 million base worth up to $5.5 million. Dodson, very intriguing on the field, graded a 90 by PFF last year, the highest among any linebacker, and according to PFF, the only linebacker to grade better than 85 in both run defense and coverage, which are pretty much the two most important things for an off-ball linebacker. Dodson replaced an injured Matt Milano in the Bills' starting lineup in Week 8, was part of their second-half regression to the mean. Besides his limited track record as a starter, his market was perhaps also affected by a guilty plea to misdemeanor disorderly conduct charges in 2019 after he was initially arrested on domestic violence charges stemming from an incident where his girlfriend told police he became violent with her during an argument. After that plea deal, Dodson served a 6-game league suspension. So that's obviously as exciting as this is in terms of the success that Dodson had on the field after becoming a starter last year. That's a really significant downside to this move in terms of having him as part of the Seahawks. Ari completing the defense on Tuesday. The Seahawks reportedly agreed to a deal with Jonathan Hankins. That deal just completed, so we don't have, maybe not official, so we don't have a contract value. Hankins follows new defensive coordinator Aiden Durday from the Cowboys, where he was Hankins' D-line coach. Hankins started all 14 games he played last season, played just 40% of snaps, so he's definitely a rotational guy. He recorded a career-high 3 sacks last season, but known much more as a run stuffer. And this is a position where obviously the Seahawks needed considerable help after Brian Bonet's injury and his being released coming into this season. All right, on offense, let's start with the trade. So after Drew Lock signed a one-year, $5 million deal to sign with the Giants to sign with a compete for a starting job, according to John Schneider, but to come in as a backup, according to Drew Lock. Very different perspectives on the signing for the two of them. The Seahawks subsequently, later that day, traded a third and a fifth round pick to the Washington Commanders for quarterback Sam Howell and fourth and sixth round picks. The value of those picks nets out to the last pick of the natural third round by the Jimmy Johnson chart, but since that tends to overvalue higher picks, if you go by the Chase Stewart valuations, it's about a fifth round pick, which is where Howell was drafted. He has 2 seasons left at the minimum on his rookie contract. After starting all 17 games last season for Washington, he threw an NFL high 612 pass attempts.
He started all 17 games?
I didn't think this was true either, but that's what Pro Football Reference says.
That can't be true. There's no other way to find out this information.
We can neither confirm nor deny the possibility that Sam Howell started all 17 games last season.
I mean, it was like after the point that we stopped paying attention to the Commanders, Sam Howell was just still starting.
I really thought that there was a point late in the season where, but I guess he just got relieved off the bench at one point, and that's really what I'm remembering about the, because it was, who came in? Yeah, Jacoby Brissett came in for him at one point. But did not ever start.
That is incredible.
So his 21 interceptions led the NFL, as did his 65 sacks. He was ranked 23rd of 30 qualifying quarterbacks by the EPA plus CPOE composite. That's a little more because of his completion percentage over expected. That ranked 20th.
Who is Washington signed? EPA
have they, ranked 25th.
They have not added a quarterback, but they have the second pick in the draft?
I believe they have. Yes, that sounds
okay,
right.
Okay, yeah. So they're just almost certainly drafting one of Drake May or Jaden Daniels.
Yes, they are. They are for sure drafting a quarterback and starting said quarterback. I don't know if they've signed any, you know, just kind of like journeyman type to compete for the job or to do that mentoring. Oh, they did. They signed Marcus Mariota.
Okay, but ultimately, they're clearing out the young quarterbacks. They just don't want to spend their time developing Sam Howell when they're drafting a new quarterback.
I mean, it's very similar. Obviously, the comparison here is Justin Fields, who was then traded to Pittsburgh for, I believe it's a 6th-round pick that could become a 4th-round pick, depending on playing time. And, you know, a lot of Seahawks fans wanted them to trade for Justin Fields. It's an interesting call. I don't think it necessarily says they think Sam Howell is the better quarterback in a vacuum, but it does to me say that they didn't think Justin Fields was good enough to compete for the starting job.
Yeah. I think Justin Fields puts them in a more complicated situation than Sam Howell puts them in, if that makes sense. Even though Sam Howell has experience starting every single game last year, there's the thing about if Justin Fields is the backup quarterback, there's always going to be the play Justin Fields crowd. And I don't think that exists with Sam Howell in the same way. At the same time, they have a starting quarterback who was ultimately not terrible last year. There were definitely worse quarterbacks across the NFL. He has experience. He has the reps. If he comes in and is playing for you, it's not a disaster at backup quarterback. And it's a pretty similar position to Drew Lock. But there's always that window of like, maybe Sam Howell's good.
Sure. If he plays great, awesome.
Do I think that Sam Howell is going to be a starting caliber NFL quarterback after this? Probably not. But it is within the window of possibilities for Sam Howell more than it is for Drew Lock at this point.
I mean, well, he's got to be more than an NFL starting caliber quarterback because he's got to beat out Geno Smith, who's pretty good. You know, it's not like the 2022 Seahawks when we're thinking of this is, yeah, Geno Smith would be the worst starting quarterback in the league, and that's all Drew Lock had to beat out. Now we're thinking of this as Geno is like a league average quarterback, and Sam Howell has to be
that. And it's 2 years at the minimum. It is 2 years at the minimum. Backup quarterbacks are I think
Drew Lock just signed for $5 million.
I think backup quarterbacks are maybe up there with the most overpaid position in the NFL because teams aren't willing to accept that if their starter gets hurt, it's going to be a disaster no matter what.
I mean, I think what happened with Drew Lock last year is the situation you want, where he was able to come in and he beat the Eagles, right?
Yeah, yeah, he did. You want me to wake up Mateo to ask him if they called the pass interference that he saw but nobody else did?
I met some people in Philadelphia that you just probably aren't talking to as many other Eagles fans. But, you know, the ability to come in and do that off the bench, I think, and Sam Howell, as you said, provides that. And if it was Justin Fields, the biggest complication, I think, to his trade market, even more so than, you know, NFL teams probably not valuing him as highly
and
as Bears fans in particular, is he's only got 1 year left on the deal. It was pretty cheap. It's only like $3.2 million.
It's still more expensive than Sam Howell.
You'd have to make a decision after this year.
Yeah. This was I would much rather have Sam Howell than Justin Fields in this position. Like if you're trading,
I would have been happy with either of them, to be clear.
If you're trading for Justin Fields, it is with the anticipation that Justin Fields might eventually be your starting quarterback.
Right.
And that is not the same thing that you're doing with Sam Howell. It is he's a backup quarterback. He's young, maybe, but with Justin Fields, the goal is to have him eventually start for you. But there's money that teams are spending on backup quarterbacks. Up to tens of millions of dollars on backup quarterbacks when if you have a finite amount of money, that's just not a good way to allocate it.
I mean, I think if you're going to spend that much, it's because you think there's at least a chance they're going to start. So like, you know, Sam Darnold in Minnesota, I don't know if I would categorize him as a backup quarterback. I don't know if we ever saw what kind of deal did Jimmy G get with the Rams? That was an interesting one because he was someone I also thought might be an interesting backup quarterback for the Seahawks.
I mean, he's better than Sam Howell, but it was also, I'm sure, more money.
Yeah. But I never saw a dollar figure on that one.
But Sam Howell gives them the chance to win a game or two as the backup. I mean, when they played against the Seahawks, obviously he was only good against very bad defenses. But when he played the Seahawks, it was like, Sam Howell can do some things.
So, yeah, I'm still not seeing a dollar figure here. The other offensive additions for the Seahawks, all free agents on the offensive line, all of them not projecting as starters at this point, you know, projecting as depth at center. Bringing back to Seattle, Nick Harris, UW legend.
You know we love this one.
1 year deal up to $2.5 million, only the $1 million signing bonus guaranteed, according to my ESPN colleague, Brady Henderson. Spent the last four seasons as a backup for the Browns, who drafted him in the fifth round. Harris started just four games in that span, but did see action last season as an extra lineman, lining up at fullback in short yardage situations. And he played at UW for new Seahawks offensive line coach Scott Huff.
Just a beautiful signing for depth offensive line. You always need depth offensive line. Nick Harris has a very good chance of getting on the field. $2.5 million for somebody who can provide, obviously, backup center, but probably many different positions on the line if necessary.
This strikes me as very similar to the Austin Blythe signing. That was actually in year two of, you know, a new offensive coordinator, that Shane Waldron, that he had played for with the Rams. But, you know, this is not the offensive coordinator because he didn't overlap with Ryan Grubb at UW. But the offensive line coach has experience with that, you know, very solid, like even as a college player, always known as one of the premier technicians in the game. So, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. At guard, they signed Tremaine Ingram Jr. from the Rams, the 2020 seventh round pick, started one game in his four seasons in LA, that coming in week 18 of last season against San Francisco. So Seahawks must have seen something here. But this definitely feels like the one position more than any other where after losing Damian Lewis on a four-year $53 million deal to the Panthers, the Seahawks have to draft someone at guard.
More to come on that?
In terms of filling the position?
The quotes from John Schneider about guards.
Let's get into those now.
Okay.
So John Schneider was on Seattle Sports 710 last week and said, guys get overdrafted at that position, and in my opinion, they get overpaid. So pretty clear the Seahawks were not interested in paying Damian Lewis that much money.
I mean, I don't exactly know what that means. And I guess we're talking about allocation of resources type thing. But like, if the market is that for a player, they're not overpaid necessarily.
Well, I mean, I saw some people say basically, well, they get overdrafted and overpaid because there's not very many good ones. And It's like, Well, yeah, that would be why they're valued.
But they also, that means that they're appropriately drafted and appropriately paid.
I agree. But we know that running backs are, in fact, overdrafted and overpaid because the league sees the best running backs is very different from the lowest paid running backs. And in reality, that difference is not that great. And if the same thing is true at guard, then that can be a good strategy to take.
It's almost impossible to tell. I will say there were a lot of mock drafts that came out today. I guess we were far enough into free agency. And almost every single mock draft I saw had Troy Faletonu to the Seahawks.
I mean, it's fascinating, this quote, in the context
but
of
like
Troy
Faletonu. But the amount of time that people are doing mock drafts or spending listening to quotes from John Schneider is probably not that high. They were looking at it from the perspective of a guard, a team that needs a guard probably position-wise more than anything, who is probably good, played in the city of Seattle. That's where that thought ends.
100%. So the Damian Lewis was the highest drafted guard that the Seahawks have taken in the John Schneider era. He was the 69th pick early in the third round.
And I think that's probably more important than anything else. This quote from John Schneider, not necessarily a big deal, but their actions are the big deal there, that they haven't drafted a player that high.
And that they've drafted kind of saturation guards in that third to fourth round range. That it's one of the positions that they have really repeatedly drafted in the third round, going back to John Moffitt in 2011. Mark Lewinsky was in the third round, or the fourth round. Phil Haynes was in the fourth round. Reese Odhiambo was in the third round. And then Anthony Bradford last year in the fourth round.
A lot of these players have been just some guys.
I mean,
but also they've been wildly successful with some of these guys starting. So
that is my expectation, is that they will draft a guard. But, you know, we noted before last year's draft that they had never taken a quarterback, you know, above a certain point. Really, 2 years ago was when we talked more about them drafting a quarterback. And then they drafted Devin Witherspoon, number five. So, you know,
it's not exactly like a guard, though. Like, I think there is a difference between those things.
Well, Ben Baldwin, one of the things he posted the other day is now that the full five-year window for rookie contracts from the 2019 draft is complete, if you rank the guys who were in the 2019 draft by the second contract they got, and it looks like what you'd expect it to positionally. Quarterbacks at the very top, including Danny Dimes. A lot of wide receivers, a lot of edge rushers,
literally
a lot of interior offensive linemen.
Last year, last week, which was, this is how basically you should be spending picks.
Yep.
Wait, but interior offensive linemen?
Interior defensive linemen.
Defensive linemen.
Yeah.
So the positions that teams ultimately value are quarterbacks, receivers, edge rushers, and interior defensive linemen.
Yep. I mean, so you get some players at other positions in there. As he mentioned, I believe that was Saquon. No, I guess it wasn't Saquon. It was Justin Jacobs. Josh Jacobs was in there by virtue of getting the franchise tags. There was one running back. I mentioned tackles, right? Tackles were not as high as you'd think. There was Chris Lindstrom as a guard, was 17th on that. He signed a five-year, $102.5 million second deal, and Elgton Jenkins as a guard was 21st. So it's not like inconceivable that a guard can have that kind of value. But like when you look at the top half, the top 16, it's two quarterbacks, four wide receivers, six edge rushers, and four defensive linemen.
Is there any reason that the Seahawks, Laiatu Latu's value is definitely, seems like it's gone down in the draft process, and he's now a late first round pick player. And I saw that and I was just like, should the Seahawks just take this player? Like, you always need edge rushers. There's never a time when you're like, wow, we're set at edge rush.
And that's a position that they haven't taken in the first round since Bruce Irvin, right? I have this list up in front of me. But Frank Clark obviously was their first pick, but
yeah,
he was a second rounder.
55 or something? Or
a little lower than that. He was pick 63.
And then Boye Mafe, they took fairly high, but not in the first round.
Yes.
I think they would if the right player was there.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly just like,
oh, LJ Collier.
They
thought they took an edge rusher. It turns out they didn't. So
they've actually taken quite a few players in that range.
They've liked to take them in the defensive ends. They've liked to take in the second round edge rushers. That's where they,
and even Malik McDowell's not far off from that too.
Yes. One of those being Daryl Taylor, who they did re-sign on a one-year deal for up to $3.5 million, giving him the base salary he was due on the restricted free agent tender, and then throwing in a $20K signing bonus and $350K incentives based on sacks. That kept him out of free agency and also did him a bit of a solid, because Taylor was only headed to restricted free agency at the conclusion of his rookie contract because he missed his entire first season on the NFI list.
I kind of think it's a steal for Daryl Taylor. Who's a player who looked like he might break out. And be,
I mean, he's coming off a down season, but yeah, I think that's the time to re-sign someone, certainly.
The reality is, when we talk about that draft pick, yes, they're probably going to draft a guard. That guard will probably come later. They're not making, what is the pick that they have, 16?
I believe 20, right?
The Seahawks are not going to be selecting pick 20 in this NFL draft.
That you think they're for sure trading down?
That is the thing that I hold with the highest confidence.
Oh, no, you were right. Pick 16.
With that, they are not going to be making pick 16 in this draft.
Well, that's one way you think you get more drafts, picks in that third to fourth round range to take guards.
I just cannot imagine a scenario. You know, I think it's a fine place to be selecting players, but if they can get down to late first round, early second round while using that pick and adding draft capital after that, knowing they need a lot of players, like that is the thing that I feel about the most confident about that the Seahawks are going to do. So we can look at all the mock drafts that there are and talk about guards and Troy Fautanu, but they're not going to be selecting a player there, so it doesn't matter at all.
100% certainty.
Literally 100%.
All right, the last offensive lineman they signed is...
Yes, it is.
Bring it back, George Fant.
There we go.
First off, what if they made the whole offense out of Fant?
There we go.
A two-year deal...
I feel like George Fant's the only offensive lineman we care about.
About bringing him back. TJ Lang if he were to come out of retirement. That's a very Bob Condotta joke.
I love George Fant.
Oh, yeah. Who does it? A two-year deal that, according to Aaron Wilson, is up to $14 million. This was kind of a shocking figure because he played for like $3 million last year. Started 13 of his 16 games for the Texans after starting 36 of the 37 he played during three seasons with the New York Jets after leaving Seattle. Has settled in primarily as a right tackle after starting out at left tackle in Seattle, but you know, obviously the ability to play both of those positions. And you'll recall he played a lot as a sixth lineman during his last two seasons in Seattle. But if the actual value is anything near $14 million, it seems like a very troublesome indicator health-wise.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they spent a lot of time without tackles last year. George Fant is going to be on the field. And if he's not, that's a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he's not, because it means that Abe Lucas is healthy after knee surgery. You know,
we were so low on Leonard Williams coming back. God, how wrong we were.
Well, not as wrong as we were. Were we wronger about that than Daryl Taylor?
We were pretty low on Daryl Taylor, too.
Yeah, none of us had over 15%. Ben at least had 33% of Leonard Williams coming back.
Can we talk about this offseason as a whole?
Well, let's real quickly just go through. They also re-signed Artie Burns, who has spent the past two seasons with the Seahawks, played 23% of snaps last season, primarily as a nickelback after settling in at that position. The other departures... Bobby Wagner signed a one-year deal worth up to $8.25 million with the Commanders. Good for him. Reunites him with Dan Quinn and Ken Norton Jr. on the Washington defensive staff. And then DJ Dallas signed a three-year deal worth up to $8.2 million with the Arizona Cardinals. Probably a little more chance to play as a running back than he had in Seattle.
And also getting, I have no idea what the guaranteed money is, but like, go get that money, DJ Dallas.
Oh, and Devin Brooks signed...
Jordan Brooks?
It's Devin Bush.
Devin Bush?
That's what I complained there. Devin Bush signed with the Browns.
His notes are all over the place.
Yes, they are.
Okay, so we had a fight last week about comp picks. Basically...
whether the Seahawks valued comp picks.
And you were saying, this was on day one or day two of free agency, that you felt like that's what was happening here. Yep. And my argument was... I don't know about that. Now that a week has passed and we've seen the players that the Seahawks have signed, The answer is very obviously that they are valuing comp picks. So where do they stand with regards to comp picks at the moment?
So the one thing is, you know, this is a moving target as these contract details come in. And even though the George Fant contract has been official since, I believe, last Wednesday, we still have not seen an actual breakdown of the year-by-year figures. So it's pending that presumably Tremaine Ingram and Jonathan Hankins are not going to be qualifying free agents. Nick Harris is not based on the value, current value, but if he, I don't think even if he maxed out, it would qualify. But George Fant and Tyrell Dodson will probably be qualifying free agents. They'll cancel out the six round picks that they have coming for Bobby Wagner and Colby Parkinson, but that would still leave them with a fourth rounder for Damian Lewis and a fifth rounder for Jordan Brooks.
So they clearly are, they're definitely targeting players. I mean, they might have just looked at Tyrell Dodson and on the field been like, we just have to do this.
Right.
As far as the player coming in.
I mean, it's hard to like completely make the entire plane out of players who got waived and don't count.
It's pretty clear what the Seahawks are trying to do with this offseason, which is rebuild the defense, bring in a handful of players, offensive line, find a backup quarterback, without sacrificing the comp picks. And I think if you do the are you better now than you were 4 years ago thing, when you look at these players that are gone, Drew Lock, DJ Dallas, Damian Lewis, Will Disley, Colby Parkinson, Devin Bush, Bobby Wagner, Jordan Brooks, are there any of those players that you're like, oh, the Seahawks can't go on without that player, especially when you look at the additions? I think the team is probably better than they were a week ago on the field. Plus, I mean, the comp picks.
The week ago is a tough one because they already had lost a lot of talent by waiving Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams and Will Disley. But Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams haven't signed. Will Disley signed for a lot less than he was making last year. I think one of the biggest things that people need to understand about Seahawks free agency, they're like, how did the Seahawks get better and get closer to the NFL's elite teams? And it's like, guys, that wasn't possible. They went all in on last season financially, took on these massive dead caps for this year, knew that they were doing it, and didn't make the fucking playoffs.
Uh-huh.
So now you're eating, you know, that was them sowing.
Uh-huh.
Now we're reaping.
But the thing is, they're not even reaping.
They're reaping to a degree.
They really are not reaping.
That's where I think they are not as good. They haven't gotten better, and you would have hoped that they would get better.
I don't know if that's true.
Maybe they've gotten a little
really
bit better.
Can you really confidently tell me that they haven't gotten better?
No, like, but they're not.
You can't confidently tell me that they've gotten worse, and they're adding comp picks.
I think they've
they're younger.
I think they did it right.
They are younger across the board. This is,
but I still
aside
think,
from the
I
Leonard
still think
Williams
they're cleaning
deal,
up some of their messes, is what I'm saying.
I think they've done a phenomenal job cleaning up their messes. Aside from the Leonard Williams deal, where they obviously overpaid Leonard Williams, this is an A offseason. It's not an A plus offseason, but given the situation, there's basically nobody out there that they could have. Like, who do people want? I get it, it's not Patrick Queen, but like, aside from that,
but like, why would you look at it and be like, well, sure, the Jamal Adams deal failed, but if we go out and get this guy, like,
I don't know,
why don't they sign the good players?
We're arguing with a person that doesn't exist.
Oh, these people exist. They are all over the mentions of Seahawks beat writers.
Who are the players, though, literally on the field, that person who doesn't exist, you claim exists, is wanting the Seahawks to sign Saquon Barkley?
They probably wanted the safety from Baltimore, Julian Stone.
Sure.
That's actually a former NBA player. Geno Stone, right? Yes, that's right. Because Geno intercepted Geno.
It's just not that Geno Stone was not going to be the difference. You know what I mean? He wasn't a Leonard Williams-like piece that was going to be. The Seahawks weren't one Geno Stone away. Rayshon Jenkins
agree,
is good.
But this is not how people think about it.
Well, people are wrong.
I agree that people are wrong.
I like
you
we're both yelling.
I've
tried to find an argument here, but there isn't one. I agree with you more! That's it. This was a great offseason so far for the Seahawks. They're going to retool in the draft. They're going to be a very, very young team. They're going to be kind of older at quarterback in a couple of key positions while also being extraordinarily young next year. They're setting themselves up both for this year and the future.
I guess the other thing we should talk about
the only thing that matters with getting to the level of the teams that are at the top of the league is, look, there are no fucking superstars that they are going to go get. Those players don't hit free agency. Any player that is guaranteed to make a difference. You might get lucky with a defensive player, but
Christian Wilkins might have been that level of player.
They weren't, in the way that they weren't one Leonard Williams away, they also aren't one Christian Wilkins away.
I agree with that. I'm just saying that he is that level of player and he did hit free agency.
But the contract value for Christian Wilkins would have never, it would have been the same thing as Leonard Williams, right?
Yeah.
He never would have exceeded. I don't know how old Christian Wilkins is, but like, it just, it wouldn't have made that big of a difference overall. The offseason that the Seahawks had is the offseason that the Seahawks needed to have.
Yes.
Is to be young, to be relatively cheap, to be able to get off these players if they need to, and to build through the draft. And that's what they've set themselves up to do. They have a good offense. They have an interesting defense. They have a defensive coach who hopefully can take all these parts and turn them into an average defense, above average defense. If he could do what Pete Carroll thought he could do, this is a good fucking team.
Yeah.
So, I think they are right now, I think that if you look at the percentage chances of for each place to finish within the division, I think the 49ers are pretty confidently number one team in the NFC West. I think the Seahawks, their percentage chances of finishing second are higher than anybody else's in the West. When you factor in regression from the Rams, the Rams also have an older quarterback, Aaron Donald, just retired. Like, I think the Seahawks are more likely to finish second in the West than almost anybody else.
And that, well, puts them,
that puts them in the position to make the playoffs. And if they make the playoffs with this team that is still extraordinarily young, that is a great place to be. If they were able to make the playoffs next year.
They're extraordinarily young. They are younger than they used to be.
They're going to be even younger also. Like, the amount of draft picks that they will have made in the last 3 years is going to be pretty massive.
Yeah. It's the way to do it.
So,
but also that's because you're counting them having traded down on this year's draft, which still
yeah, factoring in those draft picks. I think they have the team set up about as well as you could. The reality is having a superstar quarterback is the only thing that they could have done to have taken themselves to the top of the league. But those players, that player doesn't exist.
I mean, again, those players do exist. They're just not on the Seahawks. They're not on the Seahawks.
Yeah.
I mean, again, the other thing.
Patrick Mahomes exists. Josh Allen exists. But they don't have those players.
I think the other thing you're still underselling is that, you know, let's see, where's the current standings? They're number 7th in the NFL in dead money this season. And that's just not a place you want to be in. And hopefully they will not be in that place going forward.
But they could be in that place and still not be a bad team.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, let's not be back in that place. And guess what happens when you sign a bunch of free agents? You put yourself in position to
have to
cut
those players. Yeah, they're set up now
to
when they have to re-sign players. When some of these young players are ready for their second contracts, they'll be able to give them those second contracts.
By the way, we did get details on the Tyler Lockett renegotiation, and it was much more team-friendly to the Seahawks than I anticipated based on the reporting. Is it turned out that Lockett did get a guarantee on this year's base salary. It was part of the new guaranteed amount. It wasn't just a signing bonus. So they did add a little bit to his dead money next year, but it's now about $14 million, which means if they did end up moving on from him next year via waiver, they would save $17 million in terms of his base salary and roster bonus and per game bonus. So
there have been all these stories about, I think it was something like no quarterback who's been drafted in the last 3 seasons is projected to be a starter on an NFL team right now.
I believe there's two that were drafted.
Okay.
It's Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence, yeah.
And Brock Purdy.
Purdy, yes.
The first pick and the last pick.
But these people are doing think pieces right now because we're bored about how there's an NFL like quarterback evaluation problem across the league, which that to me is like, it's not like we're missing these players or whatever. Like, if there was a quarterback evaluation problem, the issue would be that there'd be all these players who are undrafted who ended up being starters. And I think the reality is the threshold is really fucking high to be a good starting quarterback in the NFL. And there probably are only like 12 people on the face of the earth or something who are able to be at that level. And also, people are not happy with just good enough.
But also, there's only 32 quarterbacks. So, yeah, by definition, half of them who start are going to be below average. And then more of them are going to play than 32 because of injuries.
Yes.
And those guys are going to be even worse than those 32 on average. So, yeah.
It was just such a strange think piece to to even exist. But like the expectation is that, I don't know, if you're a team that drafted a quarterback in the first round in the last 2 years, you're like, why didn't this work? This should work every time. When the reality is finding a quarterback like that is so extraordinarily valuable. If it was an easy thing to do, everybody would just do that.
Exactly.
Anyway, it's a great offseason. I'm very happy with it.
All right. Well,
aren't you?
Yes. No, I'm happy with it. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to not thinking about the NFL for a little while after this. Like, the draft will be fun, but...
Yeah, it's going to be like a month of saturation draft coverage. I had a friend post in a Slack I'm on. Based on the volume of draft coverage, I thought that the draft was next Thursday.
Oh, it's actually not coming
in more than a month.
Yeah, 12 weeks away from the draft. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of draft, especially because there are a lot of quarterbacks at the top. Right now, it seems like quarterbacks going 1, 2, and 3. That's something that people are very excited about. And I hope that the Seahawks are able to use that, that there is maybe some steam around a quarterback. I mean, it might be Michael Penix even. Seems like J.J. McCarthy right now is kind of higher, but who knows? The funny thing for quarterbacks we've seen this last couple of years is J.J. McCarthy might be drafted number 4 overall. And J.J. McCarthy might also be drafted in the 3rd round.
Oh, 4th round.
So... It's kind of incredible. Like, I'm extraordinarily confident that Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May will be drafted in the 1st round. But for any quarterback outside of that, it wouldn't shock me if they went basically anywhere between, again, top 10. And I don't think J.J. McCarthy's falling in the 4th round. But, like, top 10 to the 3rd round, I wouldn't... Like, Michael Penix could be the 100th pick in the draft.
Yep.
I wouldn't be shocked. And he also could be the 15th pick in the draft. So... Yep. I mean, hopefully that there is still excitement about those quarterbacks around where the Seahawks pick, and maybe they can leverage that for that tier 2 or tier 3 quarterback.
That would be nice, but we've got a month to talk about the draft. We've also got more time now that there's no live pod and end date.
To talk about my birds, baby!
To talk about our search for Seattle's best cookie, which took us back to Burien this week, and Lowrider Cookie Company. This from their website. Lowrider was started at farmers markets and pop-ups around Seattle and is now grown to multiple relocations in Seattle in the surrounding area. Lowrider is named after the owner's 2 dachshunds, Smokey and Riley. So I first had Lowrider in September 2020 at their trailer location as part of the Georgetown Trailer Park Mall. They already had a location in Capitol Hill, but then later opened one in Burien, a brick and mortar now in Georgetown, as well as they have a location in Concourse A of SeaTac Airport. Not a place I spend a lot of time because that's the
Delta
side.
Isn't it pronounced Dachshund? Am I wrong about that?
No, that probably says right.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that's where I'm at. I'm definitely right on that. Yeah, you're wrong.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
You're the one with fucking dogs over here. That's true. Okay, anyway. I didn't hear any of the other words you were saying because I was triple-checking that I was right, correcting your pronunciation of something.
Of course you were. You got Lowrider earlier today. Tell me about your experience.
It was my first ever time to Lowrider, and I think it's such an unfortunate thing that it's in Burien, Washington, because we talked last week about not going, I hadn't been to Treat in a while. And I hadn't been to Treat before we reviewed it last week. Basically, I was just like, I know Treat, put it in the bracket. We don't even need to think about it.
Because I picked up a bunch of cookies, was going to bring them over to you, but you weren't feeling well. So I ended up having to eat all the cookies.
Sorry to burden you.
That did not stop me from eating part of your cookie earlier.
So it was almost... like there was a treat size cloud over my trip to Lowrider because I was going to Lowrider and I was going to Treat after.
It's not just that they're both in Burien. They're like 4 blocks away from each other.
It would be like if there was another pretty good pizza place that opened in Burien and you're like, well, I have to also need to go to Stevie's Famous.
No, it'd be like if there was another Seattle sports podcast that was recording in Cascade.
Yeah. Beast Pode. So it was really hard for me to judge. I went there. Again, seeing the cookies the way that they are, they're sort of like erupted volcano style, where they're puffed up on the outside and then lowered on the inside, a lot of them. It seems like they specialize in filled cookies, which are like a...
Is that what an erupted volcano looks like, in your opinion?
Yeah, they're like calderas is what they are.
Okay, but they're not... Like, I think of the conical. I would actually say treats cookies, especially the...
No, that's not erupted. The treat is more like volcanoes, and lowrider is more like calderas.
I suppose so.
I knew that's what we'd be comparing these to. But it was it's an interesting shape because it's unlike any other cookie we've had.
I agree.
In this search and how they have them. And then the other piece is that they have the milk bar style cakes, which look good. I'm not going to say that they don't look good because, of course, milk bar cakes are good.
They also specialize, though, in filled cookies, which look kind of similar but are much larger.
So I had the chocolate chip cookie. I enjoyed the chocolate chip cookie. It was good. It's just really difficult to have judged it. In terms of, I went there and I was like, I want to get something smaller because I have to save room for a fuckload of treat cookies. And we are judging Seattle's best cookies. So at the same time, if one of those cookies had such gravity to it that it affected my trip to the first location, I think that the other location is clearly better. And so I think for me, it'd be hard to put it in the bracket knowing right now going in that treat is going to beat it.
You've already done that head-to-head.
Yes.
You have to be Burien's best cookie if you can be the
Seattle exactly, yes.
cookie.
Well, I went to the cookie corner of Washington State, though.
It is quite remarkable, yes. I had the...
I'm curious to hear about the filled
one. Filled chocolate and peanut butter, and it's a little bit like... The filled ones are not...
Describe it to me in volcanic purposes.
Well, there, the magma is the filling.
Yeah, okay.
It has not yet erupted out.
But it doesn't even look like, it doesn't look like the treat cookies that look like volcanoes.
No. It's also a flat top.
We're talking about this and I'm having a hard time not going to get a treat cookie right now.
It is the real challenge of this whole thing. So the texture is a little bit different, and it was almost kind of like full-on peanut butter, but then there were like a couple nuts in there that were quite delicious. So I enjoyed it, but I agree with your assessment. I think this probably, you know, we've put treat in the three. No one weighed in with what our version of the Michelin star should be. So I got to push this discussion on the Discord. But I would say this is a one Michelin star worth a stop.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I did want to add further, I still am feeling kind of the same way about treat, which is going into the bracket. This isn't like a flower box type situation, if that makes sense. I think that the cookies are extraordinarily good. They are just kind of so much. And flavor profile wise, again, I got, it was a fruity one that I had today. I mean, I've got way more waiting, but they're so excessive.
The one that looked the most like a volcano.
They are so excessive, the cookies. Like, it is a full meal, every single treat cookie. And I do wonder if a more traditional cookie is going to be able to beat them out. No, yeah. I haven't had the chocolate chip yet, but they're so excessive in everything that they do that... I don't know. I feel like the Bells and Hello Robin, the more traditional style, just excellent cookies on their own. I feel like they've got a shot here, in my opinion.
Well, that's why we're creating drama for the bracket, certainly.
Okay, there's one other thing. I actually wanted you to look this up. I was driving in downtown Renton on Sunday.
Okay.
And there was a long line of people waiting for a malasada food truck. And we were talking like probably hundreds of people.
Wow.
On a Sunday morning in Renton. So, and you know, when I see that, when I see a long line of people, I'm just like, I got to know what they're waiting for. And then I got to the front and it was a malasada food truck. Can you see what it is?
New Hawaiian Malasada's food truck in Seattle. Is it this Goodbelly LLC? Let's see here. This was last week's schedule. Or this is this week's schedule? Just in North End, so it doesn't look like it's maybe this one.
Okay, we have to figure this out, though. Because again, there was...
Maybe you should have given me some advance notice instead of surprising me on the podcast.
Such a huge line for these malasadas.
Oh, no, here it is. It is that. It was at Rain City Market, which is not a place I know of that looks cool in Renton. And I see an enormous line.
Okay, Good Belly LLC. We have to do some research here.
Yeah.
How did we let this one get by us?
I mean, it seems like it's fairly new. So, yeah. Additional research will be done on this one. No, I guess they've been around for at least a year. But they were mostly up north. So you can see how that would have escaped our sights.
I mean, the malasada is so hot right now.
Oh, understandably. The malasadas I had in Kauai were so good.
It was like, it was a perfect day. But I'm fascinated to try these.
They did a grand reopening in February.
I see that.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if, what is the one, Good Lazy, right?
Yes.
That's what this kind of reminds me of.
Yeah. I mean, the Good Lazy is still a little more. Yeah, I guess these are pretty brioche as well. So
they look pretty similar to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, people love malasadas.
I agree. I love malasadas.
I'm fascinated to see if this is in conversation with Flowerbox, because I saw the line and I was like,
"It's a Flowerbox length of line," I would say.
Yes.
All right, should we get back?
It was also like the perfect day to stand and wait for donuts.
Oh, yes. Should we get back to Seattle sports?
Sure.
All right, the Mariners, no longer bad in spring training.
Hello.
They've won 6 of their last 7 with their lone loss by 1 run, improving to 11-13 this spring. They'll close out Cactus League play on Sunday before playing their final 2 exhibitions at Petco Park in San Diego on Monday and Tuesday. Particularly standing out in spring training. You'll love to see it. Mitch Haniger has a team-high 4 home runs, 1464 OPS so far this spring. The worst news for the Seattle Kraken, whose season is basically over. They went winless on a 5-game homestand, netting a single point with an overtime loss to the Vegas Golden Knights. They gave up 10 goals in their last 2 games. They are now 11 points out of the last playoff spot in the West, with 15 games remaining and 3 teams ahead of them. Basically, at this point, the Kraken should start tanking.
Yeah. Tank it up. Looks like you can order the malasadas and pick them up. It's in freaking Everett, though.
That's very far north. All right, Seattle Sounders settled for a point on Saturday after leading the Colorado Rapids for 77 minutes after Raul Ruiz Diaz converted a penalty in the 11th minute. Much of that time was spent hanging on with 10 players after Josh Atencio picked up a 2nd yellow in the 58th minute, leaving the Sounders to sit back and defend with little possession after that point. In the 88th minute, Kabin Cabral scored the equalizer for Colorado too late for the Sounders to mount a real attack. Frankly, the Rapids were unlucky to take so long to equalize, with 3.2 expected goals on their 16 shots, 7 of them on target. The good news here, Albert Rusnak and Yaimer Gomez Andrade made their returns from injury as substitutes, but Andrew Thomas started again in goal for Stefan Fry, and still no timeline for a return for João Paulo. Sounders have played just 3 games because of their postponement in Philadelphia, but their 2 games are tied for last in MLS. LAFC also in that group, bizarrely. And their 3 goals, on the plus side, their 3 goals allowed are behind only Vancouver. This is definitely the week to score some goals, as the Sounders travel to face the San Jose Earthquakes, who have allowed a conference-high 9 goals and lost all 4 matches they've played thus far. Seattle Reign FC were able to make a penalty stand up as they opened the season with a 1-0 win Sunday over the Washington Spirit that was more dominant than it looked like on the scoreline. The Spirit managed just 2 shots, and their 0.03 expected goals were the lowest for any NWSL team in a game since 2016, per American Soccer Analysis via Field of Vision and Sounder at Heart. The Reign got their goal in the game's opening minute as Jordan Heidema won a penalty converted by Bethany Balser right out of the gate to start the season strong. It was an impressive debut for Reign midfielder Jisoo Yoon, who created 4 shots from open play with passes, according to Opta, tied for 4th most of any NWSL player last weekend. The Spirit attack partially neutralized because they played without Trinity Rodman, unavailable due to a red card in her last match of 2023. The rain now began a three-game road stretch starting this weekend in Chicago. The Red Stars won 2-0 in their opener at the expansion Utah Royals as Mallory Swanson returned to the Chicago lineup for the first time since a patellar rupture while playing for the USWNT last April.
Okay, what if, let me throw this out there. I didn't hear anything you were saying. I've been looking at Malasadas the whole time.
Yes.
Really. What if, let me just throw that out there. I was going to throw in some, that's crazies. And hello. What if instead of podcasting, we rebrand the Pelton Cast, selling Malasadas? Is this a good idea or a bad idea?
That's a bad idea. Because
I don't think people could get enough of Malasadas out there.
I do agree with that.
We don't have the ability to make malasadas. Don't worry about that. Katie must. I like that all of our plans require Katie doing all the labor and us coming up with the idea.
Look, I'm an idea man. I thrive on enthusiasm.
Let's just throw it out there and see if Katie can start making malasadas.
Okay.
Like, Katie's doing all sorts of new things lately. I heard she was volunteering. I went over there.
Group chat?
Did I tell you this?
What?
I went over there to pick up Luca, and Ella was like, Katie's in a meeting right now? And I was just like, a meeting for what? She was like, she's volunteering at the library? Anyway, it was a wild pivot for Katie. She's like helping people do something at the library. Well, so if she can do that, why can't Katie make malasadas under the Pelton Cast name and help us sell them as a hard rebrand for the Pelton Cast, where we just weekly talk about no Seattle sports anymore, no searches, just the flavors of the week.
I like how the idea
Katie would still be a special guest.
We have to stop recording the podcast as it currently is.
For our malasada business.
We're spending so much time on the malasada business.
I don't want to like change professions. I just want, instead of the podcasting hobby, to turn into a malasada hobby.
Okay.
That's mostly Katie leading it. I think I just want Katie to open a malasada business.
Well, way to throw that out there publicly.
Anyway, we'll see what happens. I'm just telling you, we have not reached peak malasada yet.
True. Although we may do it sooner than you think.
Okay. You think that we might be at malasada saturation?
No, just like it tends to go from not enough to too much.
The moment that you realize that malasadas are everywhere, that's when malasadas are actually tired. Okay.
Something like that.
Okay. We have to have Katie come up with a new idea.
Yes.
The next donut that everybody's eating.
Well, I thought you were going to tell me there's some cookies in Renton, but there are no notable cookies in Renton that I know of.
Oh, it's just nothing in Renton.
It's a
we do have
desert.
I mean, we've got our own malasadas.
Yes.
So that's something.
Multiple.
A good Lazy's in Maple Valley.
Sure. Close enough. They do Renton Farmers Market, don't they?
I don't know.
I think so.
Those donuts are pretty good.
All right, on Monday, OL Group finally announced agreement to sell their 97% stake in the Rain to a group including Sounders FC and investment fund Carlyle Group for the anticipated $58 million value. That deal is still awaiting approval by the NWSL and MLS Board of Governors, with the press release indicating anticipated closure in the spring. Left unreported thus far, the fate of Tony Parker's 3% share in the Rain.
We're all wondering.
UW softball took 2 of 3 at number 22 Arizona with the wins Friday and
Saturday.
Okay.
They've got those two college football national championships to fall back on.
I didn't even say it. It was just I corrected myself on the fly.
I know you did. It was just funny.
By a combined 24-5 margin, they did win softball national championship at some point, right?
No, I think only Oklahoma wins those.
No, but before Oklahoma did it, Arizona did. Is UW did before Oklahoma won it?
I was going to say we need conference realignment to figure this out, but they're in one of the two conferences that matter, so we're kind of screwed there.
Yeah. With the wins Friday and Saturday by combined 24-5 margin, both in 6 innings, then the Huskies couldn't score in Sunday's season series finale, a 2-0 loss. Ruby Malin took her third loss of the season in relief, but the culprit was an offense that managed to just 3 hits. After that, the Huskies dropped one spot to number 9 in the rankings. They'll put that on the line this weekend, hosting number 13 UCLA in a showdown between two of the top teams in the Pac-12. The Bruins started the season just 7-6 against non-conference competition, but haven't lost since March 1st, winning their last 10 games. They swept Utah in their opening series of conference play, then beat Rutgers and swept a doubleheader against Loyola Marymount during last weekend's Pac-12 bye. The Bruins feature UW transfer Jadlen Olchin as well as fifth-year senior shortstop Maya Brady. I believe she's niece of Tom, Maya.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And she's one of the country's best players now. UW women's basketball was seeded number 2 in the inaugural WBIT, which is being sponsored by the NCAA. Previously, there had been no second NCAA-sponsored tournament, as the WNIT is private and teams had to pay to host games. Now they will instead go by seeding in the 32-team tournament, identical in structure to the men's NIT, with the Final Four at historic Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. The Huskies open against Georgetown on Thursday. The Hoyas have dedicated their season to the memory of late coach Tasha Butts, who died last October after a 2-year battle with breast cancer, using the slogan Tasha Tough. Under interim coach Darnell Haney, the Hoyas reached the final of the Big East tournament before losing to UConn. After that game, player Grace Ann Bennett revealed the team had been told in the locker room that Haney is in negotiations to sign a long-term contract as head coach. Definite team of destiny vibes for the Hoyas, who won 22 games with a plus 3-point differential. Expect a defensive battle. Georgetown's 54.5 points allowed per game ranked in the NCAA's bottom 10, but their 57.6 points scored per game were third fewest among D1 teams with winning records. The winner of this will face the winner of a matchup between number 3 seed Tulsa and Arkansas, coached by former UW head coach Mike Neighbors, on Sunday. So, UW women last year made it all the way to the championship game of the WNIT. It was definitely not as much excitement about this tournament this year, because the NCAA tournament was a much more realistic possibility for the Huskies this time around, and even an expectation coming off of their 11-0 start to this season. But still a chance to build some more excitement with the majority of this team coming back for next year and, you know, set themselves up for a return to the NCAA tournament. UW men's basketball.
I just saw your note in there too. I was unaware of this.
Oh, wow. You didn't know that? Mike Hopkins' era came to an end in the opening round of the Pac-12 tournament on a Thursday at noon.
That was the note that I saw. No.
Which was really the only appropriate way for it to end. The Huskies led by 5 at halftime on a Moses Wood 3-point runner, but lost the lead on a 10-0 USC run midway through the second half, scored just 2 points in the 3-plus minutes after tying the game at 65. The program then announced it would decline a possible NIT bid created by Oregon winning the Pac-12 tournament. And
it was just like, let's just get out of here.
Yeah, it just didn't make sense. This was not Dan Monson coaching Long Beach State into the NCAA tournament after being announced that
he
wasn't
really
coming back. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, shouts to Dan Monson. One time UW top target. always worth remembering is when any coaching search happens, the Huskies desperately wanted to hire Dan Monson away from Minnesota and instead had to settle for like their fifth choice, Lorenzo Romar. The news that you were reacting to is that Corin Johnson has submitted notification of transfer. Now, again, as we talked about with the football team, this doesn't mean just because you explore your options via the transfer portal does not mean you're going to transfer. And everyone should do it because they don't have a friggin' head coach right now.
But is it just Corin Johnson? I mean,
he's the only one that I've seen reported thus far.
I joked last week about being excited to find out what team Corin Johnson. He's the player that teams want.
Yeah.
He's going to be, I mean,
he's not the only one. Wesley Yates III would also be certainly, you know, a very hotly coveted transfer after he didn't play this season due to injury. So he has 4 full years of eligibility remaining as a 4- or 5-star recruit coming into this year.
Corin Johnson was a pretty good player. He could shoot a little bit, and he has many years of eligibility. He's going to end up at a good school. He's not coming back to UW, but
he is a Seattle native. You were surprised to learn this last
week. Yeah.
There's a chance. I'm not counting on it. There's just no reason to count on it.
He's just going to have very good options.
Oh, yeah. He will. So, I agree.
It's fine.
Well, speaking of very good options, the current Power 6 coaching openings With Ohio State now off the list after hiring interim coach Dick Diebler, who did kind of the thing that, you know, the Huskies may have been worried if they fired Mike Hopkins midseason would happen under Will Conroy as interim head coach, where they made a run in the Big Ten tournament and decided to hire. Actually, Dick Diebler, it turned out, I was surprised, is not an alum of Ohio State, but he had coached there for a period of time, and his brother John Diebler is a legend at Ohio State. So, you know, similar ties to the program. So the current Power 6 coaching openings, Michigan, which did in fact fire Juwan Howard after I told you they were not going to,
yeah,
much to your surprise, Louisville, West Virginia, which has had that position open all year after Bob Huggins was let go over the summer, Oklahoma State, Stanford, unsurprisingly announced after their loss on the second day of the Pac-12 tournament that Jared Haas would not be coming back, and Vanderbilt would let go of Jerry Stackhouse.
Oh, Jerry Stackhouse is the coach at Vandy?
Yeah.
So how would you rank these in terms? Is that, that basically is in order?
That is. Now, the question is where Washington would they? Yeah. I think they're probably right around Oklahoma State. Like, West Virginia is not in, is marquee of a conference. I guess neither is Oklahoma State. But it matters less in basketball, as we've talked about last week.
Kind of the marquee basketball conference.
Yes. Like, Michigan and Louisville are clearly the top tier, and more importantly, the tier where they could hire someone away from a job that is still better than UW.
Yes.
That's how good Michigan and Louisville are.
Do we have favorites for those jobs at this point?
Well, Dusty May from Florida Atlantic is considered the single hottest coaching candidate this year.
So he's probably going to end up at one of those two.
But one of the rumors that has made the rounds is Mick Cronin taking the Louisville job and opening up the UCLA job.
Why would Mick Cronin take the Louisville job? Because he knows he's going to get fired.
Not necessarily, but get back to the Midwest.
It's just UCLA. They're just foisting all their head coaches other places.
Yeah, they'd probably hire someone making less money than Mick Cronin, much as they did with Deshaun Foster after Chip Kelly's departure.
It would be very strange.
UCLA is still ahead of UW in the pecking order, but that program has some pretty serious issues going on there.
UCLA is a much better basketball job than UW. What does this mean for Sprinkle?
I mean...
Probably nothing.
It would be a little surprising if he got the Michigan or Louisville jobs, but not totally surprising. And then the other jobs, how much does he value the fact that, you know, he's got ties to UW, as we talked about at length last week with his dad playing football there? We'll see.
What is the Kyle Smith destination?
Stanford is the one that gets talked about the most there.
I just don't know. I feel like Stanford is in a very strange place.
I agree.
I do not think that Stanford.
You know, it's an even stranger place.
Wazoo.
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if it's a big enough upgrade, because Kyle Smith, I assume, is a hot head coaching candidate. It wouldn't be unheard of for him to get the Michigan job, would it? Or do you think that's out of the question?
I'd be a little surprised by that, but it's not inconceivable.
Like West Virginia, could Virginia hire Kyle Smith?
Like, yes. Like, one of the questions here is, which of these teams goes on the run in the tournament? Because one of these coaches is going to get to the Sweet 16.
One of. So you're basically talking about, you can run through the coaches.
Really. Yeah, I have a list of the potential coaches to watch in the NCAA tournament.
And they are.
So Boise State with Leon Rice faces Colorado Wednesday in the first four.
What about Tad Doyle? You think they're good?
Colorado?
Yeah.
Like,
he's just staying there.
He's not like a hot coaching candidate,
okay,
and also has major job security. Let's see here. Did I get this correct? Okay. Six-seed BYU with Mark Pope faces Duquesne Thursday at 9:40 a.m. Pacific time. That's an early wake-up call for those of us on the West Coast. 10-seed Colorado State with Nico Medved after winning in the first four, just crushing Virginia. They face Texas Thursday at 4 p.m. Kyle Smith and Washington State is a 6-seed in their return to the NCAA tournament, faces Drake on Thursday at 7 p.m. And then Utah State and Sprinkle face TCU Friday at 7 p.m.
So kind of matching these coaches with jobs, like if if Mick Cronin were to leave UCLA, I could see Kyle Smith going to UCLA. That wouldn't surprise me.
Yes.
I could also see Kyle Smith going somewhere like... He's the only one on this list that basically needs to find a job. Does that seem fair?
Yes.
Many of these other coaches, there's something about, even though Washington State wouldn't necessarily be in a worse position conference-wise than Utah State or Colorado State, the fact that the program is going down a level, I think it just makes sense. And they're probably the best. They're the best they've been in a long time.
It's a hot moment. One of the interesting questions, by the way, would be if assuming Kyle Smith leaves, would Leon Rice be interested in going to Washington State, his alma mater, from Boise State? I don't know. That's an interesting one.
I still think, given all of this, knowing that there obviously have been conversations between Danny Sprinkle and UW, and there's chatter there. I mean, I'm sure that they haven't signed anything or whatever, but I would assume that they want to wait a second to see if he gets offered something better. I still think, all of these things being equal, I still think it's Sprinkle.
That would certainly be my expectation. I think the money is there. You do get varying opinions from people on how much the optics of UW hiring Washington State's coach after gestures wildly at everything else.
Oh, I don't think they're hiring Kyle Smith.
I don't think so either, but like, it would make a lot of sense for both parties if you took that emotional aspect. If he was just coaching anywhere else, even Oregon State, like, he would be an obvious candidate.
Do you think there's a chance that Iowa State's had TJ Otzelberger. I knew there was an L in there.
Otzelberg, just not Berger.
Do you think there's a chance of him going to a place like Michigan or Louisville?
Yes, because those are the kind of schools that can afford to pay his buyout.
His buyout's pretty high.
Yes.
And I assume that he has to be one of the hottest coaches as still a relatively small school.
Oh, yeah. Number two seed.
And having the team be that good. But Iowa State doesn't have that kind of gravity that UW. I think UW apples to apples with Iowa State is a better job.
I would tend to agree with that, yes.
So that's one. I guess the hope is that one of those bigger schools, if we want Sprinkle or something like that, if we want him to be the head coach, that one of those bigger schools hires somebody who is coming from, like, the Florida Atlantic coach or the Iowa State coach, where it wouldn't create a job that is a better job than UW.
Correct. Would you definitely want to root against is Mick Cronin taking the Louisville job? That's probably the worst case scenario.
I think Kyle Smith is UCLA if he does that.
It would be reasonable. It is TJ Otzelberger to correct my correction. Do we want to talk about the favorite music choices?
Oh yeah, we absolutely do. This is all of these coaches?
Well, all of these coaches made the NCAA tournament, so yes. So,
okay.
CBS.sports.com, Matt Norlander put this together with all 68 coaches, their favorite musical act, following up on, I believe it was Brett McMurphy, who did this in college football, right, last fall. And some terrific answers, I would say. I feel very good about the UW coaching candidates that we just talked about. Mark Pope comes out with Taylor Swift.
Okay, that's fine.
Kyle Smith, Digital Underground.
Wow.
Would not have guessed that in a million
that's
years.
That Kyle Smith gets down for the underground.
TJ Otzelberger, Ed Sheeran.
All right. Okay, fair enough.
I'm not necessarily counting him in my list. Leon Rice's Michael Jackson.
Okay.
I got to remember for sure which region all of these coaches are in. Both Nico Medved and Danny Sprinkle both went with Prince.
Oh, hello.
Purple Rain.
Wow. I mean, if we're playing 4D chess here, we have to think to ourselves, is Danny Sprinkle telling us something?
Only if Nico Medved is also telling us.
Maybe this is them vying for the job. When you were like, they're using it as recruitment, maybe it wasn't for players. Maybe it was for the job.
That really is 4D chess.
Imagine Purple Rain playing at Heck Ed after a Husky win. It'd sound huge in there.
It would. I don't know. I have no idea what they played after the Gonzaga win.
I think it's they have the band. You can hear the band very clearly inside.
That does make sense, yes.
Interesting, though. Purple Rain, Husky's trying to claim it as kind of a song of theirs, right?
Yeah.
Although we are now in the conference with the team from Minnesota.
Do we know if Prince having any specific affinity for the University of Minnesota?
I assume probably not. Like the Timberwolves, obviously.
Yeah, the Minnesota sports team, pro sports teams writ large. But, you know, it's always a little different with the college teams, even if they're located in the same
city. I just got to say the Golden Gophers don't feel very Princey to me.
It's like, I agree with this assessment. It's like, look.
No. I think we might be able to take that one. That Prince might be there for the taking for UW.
We know Mike Hopkins' answer to this question was Pearl Jam, but Pearl Jam was always a lot more associated with Sonics.
Did he actually answer that? He answered Pearl Jam?
I don't think
Just to be like, guys, I am aware of the Northwest.
No. Like, he legitimately was a huge Pearl Jam fan.
That's incredible. Maybe that's why he took the job.
I mean, he did have ties to the Seattle area. His dad was from here.
Okay, fair enough.
So he just didn't have any
I love the idea that
he didn't have any recruiting ties to Seattle.
They're asking him and he's like, I can't say fish. He was like, nothing from upstate New York. He was like, fuck, what's a band from Seattle? Fortunately for him, it was Seattle.
Despite that, Pearl Jam has never been associated with the Huskies. It always was with the Sonics.
Oh, I mean, it's why would Pearl Jam be associated with the Huskies? Like, it's not like Husky basketball, aside from the Six Man, has any grunge affiliation. Not that the Six Man does either. But, like, there's nothing affiliated with Husky basketball.
That's
does that make sense? There's not like a Jake One is the most affiliated musical artist with Husky basketball.
Unquestionably, yes. Has UW Athletic Department ever done anything with Jake One? I feel like that's a missed opportunity.
They're so fucking bad at this. They have no idea what's going on. The number one thing that a program could do, basically any sports team, is just try to own a thing.
Generate synergy.
Right?
Yeah.
Like the Wisconsin having, it's Jump Around that is the Wisconsin song, right?
Correct.
Literally no affiliation with it at all. They just did it one day and it worked. That is what, you have to get college football video games to go out there and try to license a song for your school and try to own something. But I think it's because of the turnover in college. I assume that it's extraordinarily high versus professional sports teams. Although there is such a, there's a professionalification happening at colleges, not in baseball, of course, and also not in basketball. It's just on the football level. I think that college football teams will be better at this in 5 to 10 years because of how professional college football teams are becoming. All you need to do is own a thing, right? The Kraken saw it with Nirvana. They were just like, that's it. Every time a goal happens, we are going to have this song play.
It was asked on Discord, what's the most only in Seattle band answer?
Jake One. That's the most only in Seattle band answer.
Zach Jabal pointed out Blue Scholars. Yes. Is a very good answer for Seattle.
I heard that song randomly.
Noah went with Stan Borison. a little older
school. Stan Borison.
Do you not even get that reference?
I don't know. That might be beyond me.
Wow.
I heard...
someone needs to go on the Google.
Slick Watts come on and I was like, oh... It's like so strange for me to hear it
as the start of our podcast.
As a song.
Yeah, they play it sometimes at Storm Games.
Oh, maybe I heard it. It was like at a thing that I heard it, and I was like, huh?
Are they introducing me? they never are. Anyway.
Can we just recognize Jake One? I appreciate Danny Sprinkle, though. Sprinkle knows what he's doing.
He does.
Let's get Purple Rain in the house.
Look, everything we've seen continues to point Sprinkle.
Yeah, it's all Sprinkle. It's raining in Seattle.
Or Nico Medved.
And honestly, Seattle's known for the light rain.
It's true.
So that feels very sprinkly. He's got the background, the 40 chess that he's playing by naming Prince as his favorite musical artist. How many Luke Combs were in that list? Was it not very many? Because those football coaches be fucking loving them some Luke Combs.
It definitely was a different vibe. I don't remember any of the football
Fast
coaches.
Fast Car is not what it was over the summer.
Mentioning
to
you. Drake. Or I think, did Hubert Davis say Lil Durk? Like, that is definitely a, like, I'm trying to recruit here answer. Which bracket was that?
Hubert Davis is the UNC coach.
Yeah, Lil Durk.
He might just fuck with Lil Durk. Also has a song with Morgan Wallen.
The most common answers were Michael Jackson with 5, the Eagles with 3, Jay-Z with 3, Luke Combs with 3.
Okay, Luke Combs is still in there. Wow.
But that's out of 68.
There's still such gravity.
So. All right. Well, a lot of gravity, treat cookies, and look calm. That's what we've learned tonight.
It's true. And my birds.
The Turox.
The Turox. You can have that one for free.
Wow. I'll be sure to drop it the next time I'm in Portland. On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.